when you open the door for somebody else.
Welcome to an episode, an important and exciting, thrilling episode of the Vaccine Conversation Podcast with Melissa and Dr. Bob. And hopefully you could hear me because, you know, you're right. I'm used to being calm for my other podcasts, for my sidecast. So that's thoughtful discussion. It's a little more calm. But being in person, having like a co-host on something, it's always like more fun. There's a lot more to go off of. Have you, well, you're just reading your book on yours, but have you noticed like kind of how different it is?
Oh, it's so different. My podcast is so boring.
I mean, even me, I'm figuring like, I'll feel like I've been talking for like hours and I'll look, it'll be like 30 minutes. And I'm just like, wow, like that's, it's, you know, it's so much easier to just have a conversation with somebody where somebody says something and you respond and you go back, and then it's effortless. And before you know it, the time is gone.
Yeah.
But when it's just you, you have to plan it. You literally have to outline what you're going to say, essentially.
Yeah. And how much easier is it when you're just reading a book?
Oh, I mean, even then, that's way easier. But I mean, like for me, I'm thinking I have to outline it because otherwise it just sounds like one big rambling moment because it's just one person talking.
Yeah.
So you have to have some kind of organization or structure or it comes off weird, I guess.
Yeah.
But I have to remind people on my sidecast, I can't do interviews every time. It takes me so long to edit those interviews because that's twice as much work because I go into each individual track.
Yeah.
So, and if those episodes are an hour, that's a, like a lot of time. But if it's just me, it's a lot quicker for me to edit. So I have to remind myself like, oh yeah, I need to put some of those episodes in between also because I can't always get somebody to interview.
Well, some people are like, what podcast are you talking about, Melissa? Because they don't know the name of your podcast.
Oh, that's right. So we just went on Facebook Live and Instagram Live. So it feels like everybody knows that because we just mentioned it. But I know we've talked about our sidecasts on this, but we've not given the name of mine because it wasn't officially registered through Apple and it was supposed to take 2 weeks, but it didn't.
Right.
It was way fast.
Yeah.
So the name of my new podcast is called What They Aren't Telling You. It doesn't have to say with Melissa Floyd. You don't have to type that part in because it's actually not part of the title. It's just What They Aren't Telling You, but it's also with Melissa Floyd.
Right.
And it's available in all regular podcast platforms. It's a red square with some big old juicy lips and like a zipper across. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to put the lips because I wanted it to be known it was a woman. It was a female. Because don't you notice, or like most of these podcasts are men. The majority of podcasts I've seen, the majority of people that have these kind of like webisode interview things are men also.
Yeah, I think all the podcasts I listen to are
I didn't realize it until...
Well, okay, tell me men, you know, men on our listeners. Aren't men just so much more interesting?
Well, because they're smart, see?
Oh, I know. Because
girls, gosh, they want to talk about cooking and clothes and shopping.
You know, actually, all my favorite sci-fi novels are all based on women, like heroines.
But they're written by a man.
One is and one isn't. Oh, okay. So my two favorite series.
One of them is like written by a woman.
Well, written by a woman. That's all about women and you know, as the main characters, and you know, my favorite one written by a man. Yeah, it's a this amazing character. No, so yeah, there's something to be said, I guess, about women podcasts.
So I had to put the lips there just to let, because it's like a little nod to female power here. A little bit of women having a discussion with men and with women and about topics that are nothing's off really limits when it comes to what we're talking about. We're not talking about just motherhood or like homemaking
whatever,
because that would be obvious.
I know your podcast is basically like the kind of stuff you post on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, timely, important topics in all different areas of life.
The stuff where people unfollow me? Yeah.
The stuff. Yeah.
And
if you've unfollowed Melissa because of something she's posted,
you're not going to like this podcast. No, it's I've had a handful of unfollowers, like I think I said before, in the hundreds over the past month. But I've had twice that gained followers over the same period of time.
Yeah, but it's so cool. I love your three episodes so far, just learning about.
So what was it like listening to the first one? How weird was that?
Well, I was crying. I was like, oh, my podcast partner has her own podcast now.
No, you're like, oh, my little baby's grown up. She's flown the nest.
The pupil has become the master.
Which, of course, like we've said this in our Facebook Lives and Instagram Lives, this is not ending. So this will still happen. This is an additional thing that we're doing. This is not something that's replacing this. This is not like, oh, I'm off to do mine, you know, see you later. But it was because Dr. Bob really had no interest in talking about this stuff. And I don't know how you cannot talk about it. And it's just funny because our audience, the majority of our audience tends to agree with me on these other topics as well, because you tend to see the same type of critical thinking, free-minded thinkers that are willing at least to have an open discussion on this. And I'm noticing, on the other hand, you see the people who are like very scared of COVID, very much shaming people for not wearing masks, tend to also follow on all the other issues on the other side of things. So, which I honestly, I think that's statistically impossible, that that would just happen on its own. So I think that leads to the conclusion that we are 100% being shaped. Our belief systems are being shaped by what we, what media, whatever, that we pay attention to.
Right. And it's largely gearing up for the next election.
You know, there's got to be something
I think it's
with
just
that.
Split down the middle based on your the party that you support.
I've heard there's some tension to be expected over the next several months.
Interesting. But yeah, I'm super excited about your podcast. It's like, you know, like every week you would send me a new COVID article or idea we should talk about on the vaccine conversation.
And a little part of you would die. Every time, a little part of it would just be like, ugh.
Yeah, so finally I'm like, hey, Melissa, you know, hey, here's a great idea.
You know what you should do? Well, also, like I told you, this is kind of perfect for people that kind of get me and like me and are okay with me as I am.
Yeah, there's a handful of those.
So those kind of people know what they're in for.
Right.
And then those who don't, those who
are in for a lovely, wonderful surprise
will not be going to that podcast, because that's what I'm saying, that they won't need to.
Yeah, no, but what's amazing so far is these three episodes you've done, you are just totally presenting the side of an issue and people involved in that issue that people normally wouldn't get exposed to. You hear their ideas, but you're not saying like their side is right, or like, you know, the side in the media is totally wrong and there's a right or wrong here. You're basically saying there are two sides to every issue. You're having a conversation with somebody who, you know, shares ideas from a side that a lot of people wouldn't hear. And I'm finding it interesting so far, because I'm learning stuff about Black conservatives and their point of view, and learning stuff I never, you know, heard of. And then hearing you talk to that police officer today, just hearing the human side of her, I thought was very fascinating. And yeah, and I think it's useful to get exposed to real people who are living those ideas, not just you yourself talking about those ideas, but real people living those ideas. It's so critical to hear that.
Well, I'm facilitating the conversation.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you what conversation to have.
Right.
I'm like facilitating, bringing people on that can share their experience and their expertise.
Cool.
I mean, everybody has their own unique like niche. That's kind of who I want to bring to the table. And so I got some really interesting people on my list that I'm hoping to convince to do it. So I have that. I will also interview Dr. Bob on my podcast, because basically the podcast is about unpopular opinions. And so, of course, as you all know, he's been an example of somebody who stepped out as an outlier, and oftentimes as an outlier getting totally criticized. And Nico's going to be on my podcast again, which is great.
Yeah.
I had Dr. Scott Jensen.
His
will be out next week. The episodes will be available next week. And I talked to Dr. Christopher Exley also.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
So in the fall, I think we're going to do an episode kind of about, again, him being a researcher who's an outlier and who has the unpopular opinion and gets criticized for it, and what that's like when you know that you're based on data, you know, you're based on evidence and information. And that's kind of what Scott Jensen talked about with me. And I have a nice list of people that I'm trying to get, who I'm potentially schmoozing into getting. And then I have a list of episodes I've already done, and
so lots of
topics.
People can just, while you're listening to this, you can search, you know, what they aren't telling you, and you'll see the one, you know, with Melissa Floyd. And so, you know, subscribe to that, and you can actually even support that. You know, I know all of our supporters were a nonprofit, and that goes into our nonprofit fund that we use to support the cause. And people can support you on a personal level on your podcast. And if they like what you're doing and want to keep, you know, supporting you and doing it, they can become a monthly supporter of you, which I encourage people to do.
Well, thank you. And if you guys have ideas for topics, I'm looking for things that are controversial,
And I'm looking for things that people can speak anonymously if they need to, but I want to bring thoughtful discussion. Yeah. So if you have a topic, I'm by no means going into the extreme zone. So I know that there are a lot of those theories out there too. I won't be covering those, but if you have something controversial, bring it to me, send me a message. If you want to see somebody interviewed, even if it's somebody on the medium to bigger side and you have access to that person, because it's really hard to just get in contact with a lot of these people, whether it's a journalist, mm-hmm. whether it's a scientist, a doctor, whoever. If you have somebody that you have direct access to and you can get them to do a phone interview with me, I will be happy to do it. Just message me on Facebook, Melissa Floyd, or DM me on Instagram, which is at Melissa Suzanne Music, because mm-hmm. I need your guys' help also to sort of bring yeah. the best things there. So help me help you. and bring these discussions with people that like really have something to share. Again, it could be a total nobody, but the story is really interesting.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I just heard here in Orange County that there was like a family who was coming to a small business and they had recently had a child who died from cancer. They were told by the hospital, they were asked by the hospital to add COVID to the death certificate. And they were told, the hospital told them they would pay the funeral expenses if they did.
Wow.
And so I'm trying to get that family
Jeez.
To cover that story. And you know what? I just heard another one yesterday of a same type of thing from somebody else.
Okay.
So this is not something new. But if you have one of those stories, I want to cover also medical malpractice. If you've been in a situation where, and it sounds like one of those commercials, if you've been injured, but realistically, if you have been injured at the result of medical negligence, medical mismanagement, and you or a family member was hurt or a family member or friend was killed by an accident, a medical accident, I want to cover that too, because we know that that's the third leading cause of death in the United States. And I think that there needs to be more information brought on that.
And it's not just like medical accidents, like hospital errors, you know, medication errors in hospitals.
Exactly.
And if you're wondering, is that an airplane sound I hear in the background? Or
I don't know if they can hear it. I didn't hear any
wind?
Of that on my last
that,
one.
Is that,
yeah.
Why is it so windy in chirping? Your garage? Because this is another backyard episode.
This is the backyard barbecue. House. I wish. That would have been fun if we actually had just like a barbecue and did all that.
Someone's flying loop-de-loops out there.
We're outside pretending it's just like a normal summer day and the world isn't falling apart. So I'm looking at the beautiful trees, the blue sky, yeah. and I'm just pretending life is different than it really is right now. So
yeah.
we apologize for the extraneous noises
but
you might
hear.
This
is way more fun.
It is more fun.
I actually like this.
Me
this
too.
This is way better than being in a garage.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Or in a real professional studio.
Doing real professional work. So today, Dr. Bob is very excited, you guys. Like he's dancing in his chair right now because... He loves these disease episodes where he gets to lead them and tell the world about his favorite thing, which are infectious diseases and the vaccines that have been created for them and the prevalence of the disease and risk associated with the vaccine. And so we have, it's been a long time coming that we have another one of these episodes.
Yeah.
Today we're going to talk about
mumps.
I wish I had a drum roll, really.
I know.
Something
it's
special.
Like, it's like super exciting. It's just like mumps. Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, boo.
Oh, that's
mumps.
All.
Yeah, but it's good to know.
It's important. I feel like everyone in this conversation, I think it's useful if you can just have a few ideas and facts at your fingertips. But you should also know how to identify these diseases in your children or people you're talking to so you know what to do when they happen and if they happen. And I don't know, this again is more about education. This is kind of a real old school episode. Like I think we did a number of these at the beginning mm-hmm. and then we didn't for a while. And we still have a few more we haven't done, but we'll eventually get to those. And there's a bee.
I love nature. Get lost.
But yeah, so mumps.
Well, let me tell you one thing about mumps that I think would be good for people to know. Mumps has been in the news. It's been in the news because there have been outbreaks. One was on a ship of soldiers, and another discussion has been on college campuses. Mm-hmm. So if you have a teenager or a young adult and you still believe in the college system, no, just kidding. Just kidding. Even though they're requiring vaccines for everybody and stuff. Everything, so much is changing. But if you have a kid that age, this relates to you too, because what people are seeing is they're seeing outbreaks again happen because mm-hmm. there's been this secondary waning immunity that we're seeing the loss of protection over time,
yes.
even with full vaccination, which would be two doses according to the CDC schedule. So it is still important for everybody to kind of understand mumps because, beautiful monarch butterfly is flying around us right now. It's important for you to know about this because this could come up in social conversation when people are talking about vaccine mandates. People should say, see, look at anti-vaxxers bringing back mumps again. And then you're going to want to understand the basic facts about it. You're also going to want to understand how these outbreaks are happening in fully vaccinated communities and populations.
Yeah.
Like 98 to 100% vaccination rates.
Oh, yeah, totally. No, this is almost synonymous to measles, but even more so.
Right.
We've already told you, you know, why measles keeps coming back. It's because everyone's lost natural immunity because people stopped catching the natural disease and did not grow up with natural immunity. And the measles vaccine gives way higher and more prolonged antibody levels than the mumps vaccine does.
Right.
So the measles vaccine technically worked even, you know, much better mm-hmm. to provide, you know, bloodstream titers that, you know, may or may not protect you from disease. The mumps vaccine works on a much lower level than the measles vaccine ever did. And so we will never eliminate mumps. It would be impossible to eliminate mumps. The vaccine just doesn't work well enough. But the vaccine flat out fails in a number of cases. And you're right. I'm pretty sure every single college outbreak mm-hmm. we've had in the last 15, 20 years has been in mostly or, you know, fully vaccinated
right.
children, simply because those one or two doses of mumps vaccine that you get wear off. And so we could potentially have a huge upsurge of mumps infections. In fact, we now expect mumps to go up and up and up because all the middle-aged to older adults
right.
who have natural lifelong immunity from natural infections, mm-hmm. they're all, you know, passing away from old age. We're going to even be in a worse position.
Just like measles,
with mumps.
Right? This is what we said about measles.
Yeah, but we'll
same
probably
thing.
Be in an even maybe worse position with mumps. Although the balancing of that is mumps is much less contagious than measles. So it doesn't spread around as easily. So every little outbreak you see is much smaller.
And the efficacy, though, like you're saying, is lower in mumps to the point where there has been even a court case, right, dealing with the falsification.
I'm totally going to talk about that. That's the exciting part of the episode.
Controversy coming.
We'll save that till the end.
Okay.
But first, you know, the exciting mumps virus.
Exciting,
mumps disease,
boring statistics. Yes.
I printed up, Melissa, a copy of my notes in case you want to, like, chime in or see where we're going. Okay. So mumps, you guys. Mumps is a virus, all right? And it used to be the kind of infection that probably not everyone caught. I don't think it was a universal infection like chickenpox and measles used to be.
You're saying because
it's
less
rubella.
Contagious.
It's, yeah, because mm-hmm. it's less contagious. But, I mean, back when they were collecting data, they would have like, you know, 150,000, 200,000, you know, reported cases every year. But they knew they were underreporting because as much as 30% of cases of mumps won't have the typical mumps symptoms. You'll just feel achy, feverish, a little flu-like. But of course, you're not going to know it's mumps because that's all you have as far as symptoms.
But what about the ones that have symptoms that they know it's mumps, but still it's not serious enough to seek medical treatment?
Oh, yeah.
It was just a common...
Yeah, you're right. Tons of undiagnosed cases, unreported cases. So, I mean, it used to be all over the place. And in recent years, and we started vaccinating in 67, I have it down. Yeah, 1967. And we've been using the current MMR combined measles, mumps, rubella vaccine since the mid-80s, the current one we use. So we kind of saw mumps die out for a while. We didn't have a lot of cases in the like early 90s to the mid-2000s. Mumps very largely went away. We had about 300 cases every year.
And reminder, the adults are the ones that have already had the wild infection.
Right, so adults were not getting infected.
They're offering population protection.
Right, right.
And so that when you do vaccinate, and it does have efficacy to a certain percent,
right.
you are going to see a decrease of something. But
right.
that's limited, and that's what you're going to prove, is that that
right.
only lasts for a period of time. Because as new generations come in now, and
yeah.
efficacy wanes for the middle generations now, and the older ones die off, like you mentioned, now we put ourselves in this position.
Yeah, so now we're seeing, you know, there was many, many years that went by where we only had 200 or 300 cases a year. Now we're having years where we have 6,000 cases, sometimes 2,000 cases. But now our yearly cases are in the thousands because, again, the vaccine is problematic. It doesn't work nearly as well. And we don't have a lot of herd immunity from natural infection. So I guess if you want to just conceptualize your child's risk of catching mumps at school or at college or out in the workplace, picture maybe, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 thousand Americans every year having this infection, as far as what's reported. So it's going to be more than that, that are unreported. So it's not widespread. It's not like the flu. It's not, you know, all over the place. The chance I think any kid is going to come across mumps is very, very low. It's probably low enough where it doesn't have to be kind of on your, you know, on your radar, right? But as you said earlier, they've had outbreaks on college campuses where every single student that caught it was vaccinated with 2 doses of the vaccine. And so so what are the symptoms? The symptoms are basically flu-like. You feel, but you might not have much of a cough. There can be a cough, but it's probably less of a cough than COVID or than the flu or whooping cough, of course. It's,
oh my gosh, this is the first time COVID has turned into one of our disease episodes on the vaccine conversation.
I know, it's
That's
listed
crazy.
Now. That is crazy. But you might have a cough, but mainly flu-like symptoms. And you have no idea that it's mumps. And then 2 or 3 days into that, you will get the classic number one sign that, you know, should set off alarm bells that it's mumps. You'll get chipmunk cheeks. Your cheeks will swell up, okay? And it'll usually start on one side, but very quickly the same day or the next day move to the other side. I'm like demonstrating this for Melissa with my hands, and you're like,
"What do chipmunk cheeks look like, Dr. Bob?"
I'll do it. So it's like that. But it's your parotid glands in your face, your main glands that generate saliva for you. Your parotid glands, they swell up.
Okay, so wait, this is not your lymph nodes in your neck.
Correct.
Okay, that's an important distinction.
It is a hugely important
because
distinction.
Because I think I would have assumed it was lymph nodes because I remember the swelling, but I think of the swelling by the base of the jaw, not necessarily the swelling on the upper part by the cheek.
Correct. You're right, Dr. Floyd. And it's funny, they actually grill that into you in medical school. The difference between mumps and, say, like lymph node swelling from strep throat, it's all based on the jawline, the mandible, your jaw. And if it's above that and in front of your ears, that's your parotid gland swelling. If it's below the jawline, it's your lymph nodes from like a throat infection. If it's both, then I don't know what it is.
You're a sickly human being and you need vitamin D supplementation stat.
Yeah. But that's the, you know, 2-3 days into the flu-like illness, you'll get the parotid gland swelling and that's when you know it's mumps.
Did you have mumps as a kid?
I did not.
You did not?
No memory of it. I did have the mumps vaccine and, so there are other causes of parotid gland swelling, other infectious causes. There are certain bacteria, other viruses that will make your parotid gland swell. So it's not always going to be mumps. And again, 30% or so of people with mumps won't get a swollen parotid gland.
How would you know if it wasn't? If you had the swollen cheeks and you had had flu-like symptoms, what would make you think that it's not mumps?
Well, if it's only one side and it never goes to the other side, then the chance that it's mumps is extremely low. If it's both sides, it's pretty much presumptive that it's most likely mumps.
And you need to have had the flu-like symptoms beforehand.
Likely, yeah, okay. Most likely. So the incubation period, the time, you know, from when you're exposed to the disease to when you develop flu-like symptoms is 2 to 3 weeks. So that's kind of a long incubation period. Most diseases are like, you know, like a few days if it's a cold or the flu. It's 7 to 10 days if it's, you know, measles or chickenpox. Chickenpox can be as long as 3 weeks, but mumps is typically, you know, not before 2 weeks. It's like 2 to 3 weeks incubation, and then you'll get contagious. You are contagious about 3 days prior to the cheek swelling. So typically, as soon as your achiness and your fever start, you're probably contagious maybe a half day before that. And then you're contagious for those few days before cheeks swell. And then you're contagious for about another 5 days after your cheeks swell. So that's kind of a long period. It's like 8 days of being contagious, 3 week, you know, incubation period. So it's a disease that kind of can spread somewhat easily through, you know, like through a college campus, because it takes so long to, I think, for people to recognize it. And it's spread through saliva. but not like measles, not like COVID as easily. Like measles, it just spreads through the air, like it aerosolizes and spreads, you know, kind of far. Mumps, it's more spread kind of like mono, like intimate contact, sharing of saliva, sharing of, you know, food and drink that you got your saliva on. Like, you know, being in a room with a college roommate.
Wait, is this like meningitis? Like you had said
similar,
about?
Similar, yeah,
as
yeah.
As far as
yeah.
how to catch it, how it...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
I was like, I've heard all those things before.
I know, yeah.
Where
no,
have I heard
right.
that?
You're right. So it's very kind of similar to that. So okay. That's why it actually doesn't spread, you know... I mean, you've heard of college outbreaks, mm-hmm. but the college outbreaks aren't typically in the thousands or even many hundreds. A lot of outbreaks are just, you know, 5-10 people. Oh, you might have larger outbreaks,
because
too,
it's not as much available like in the air or between people coughing and sneezing. It's more like you're saying this extended contact or
right.
intimate contact.
Right.
So that
right.
limits.
But it can also be coughing if you're near somebody. And but since a lot of people will be less symptomatic, then it'll spread through a community when people don't realize they have it. So that's I mean, that's kind of mumps as far as how you recognize it. You diagnose it with a cheek swab. And you can also diagnose it with a blood test, but the cheek swab is probably a little better test.
Does that only work for active infections?
Yeah, cheek swab's only for active. A blood test can look for an active or recent infection. It can also look later for immunity or past infection on a blood test. So,
well, that cheek swab test sounds a lot better than the PCR test.
Oh yeah,
for dude, COVID,
the
like
nasal
oh my god,
swab?
Yeah, oh my god.
I've done one of those. Oh. It burns.
Oh god.
It like, okay. I mean, you know how like the throat swab gags you, like if you're getting your tonsil swabbed, the nasal swab literally like burns your tissues
just,
as
yuck.
The swab's back there. Yeah, so yay for cheek swabbing. So there's no medical treatment like for mumps. There's not like an antiviral medication. We don't know. I mean, I don't personally know if there's any high doses of certain vitamins that'll directly make a difference. The main treatment, actually, it's interesting. It's to drain your parotid gland to get the saliva flowing. And so people will say, like, eat citrus, eat oranges, eat lemons, eat things that get you salivating. And that'll literally, like, drain the infectious stuff out of the parotid glands. And then you can also maybe ask your doctor about it. It's probably good to see a doctor if you have mumps. I mean, if you can get a confirmed case of mumps diagnosed and on your medical record, then that can be utilized as proof of immunity later. Like, so you could avoid like an extra dose of a vaccine or something if you have a confirmed case.
At college campuses, that's something that they are requiring, right?
Oh, yeah,
is
yeah.
an MMR.
Yeah.
Another dose of MMR.
Yeah. Yeah, you need two doses of MMR vaccine to go to college. And
it's, well, that's proof of it as in childhood, but right. aren't some campuses asking for
another
one? They
don't need a third,
one?
No.
So what happens if there's a mumps outbreak? Are they?
Yes.
Okay, I've heard about it.
Yeah, no, I totally forgot about that, but you're right. If there is an outbreak, the CDC recommends a third dose of MMR vaccine for every college person.
You
like,
can't
like
get
like
mumps by
college.
Itself.
You can't, you used to.
Yeah.
Up until 2007, you could get a plain mumps vaccine, like you could get a plain measles and rubella vaccine. So it'd be great. And Merck, who makes those, they claimed that there was not enough demand for the
AKA
single vaccines.
Profit.
Right,
profit.
Right. But that kind of pissed me off because I think a lot of people would be more accepting of these individual vaccines than the triple vaccine. But you're right. Outbreak on a college campus, they recommend everyone go get your triple MMR shot, even if you've already had two. They don't say check immunity. They say get a third dose of the triple because they know the mumps component is probably worn off.
Right. That's what I mean.
You don't need another measles. You don't need another rubella, but you're getting one by default, which then creates a lot more risk of side effects for you as an adult.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a triple live virus vaccine.
Right, right. But specifically for adults, especially women, you have a very high chance of lifelong rheumatoid arthritis if you get a dose of the triple MMR vaccine. And what I find interesting is the mumps and the measles component of that vaccine are not what gives you that arthritis. It's the rubella component of the vaccine. So yeah, if you could get a plain mumps booster, you might, because you know there's not that long-term risk of rheumatoid arthritis. So it's a shame they don't make it that way. Okay, so complications from mumps. Like, what can go wrong if you catch mumps? The most common complication is swelling and pain of the testicles, or swelling and pain of the ovaries, or even mastitis. Women can get breast inflammation from mumps. So that's not uncommon either. Like, for men, and this doesn't happen to children, like pre-puberty children. It just happens to teenagers and adults who are post-puberty. Yeah, you can get, you know, pretty significant painful testicles, painful ovaries. Fortunately, almost everyone that happens to does not have any fertility problems or sterility. People used to think, oh yeah, if you get swollen testicles or, you know, painful ovarian pain from mumps, that you're going to be sterile, you're going to lose your fertility. No, that's not true. That's very, very, very uncommon. So it probably happens to a few percent of adults who catch the disease. And as far as, you know, testicle or ovarian pain, but almost no one ever becomes infertile. Mm. And for children, they almost never would complain of testicle pain. It's really just the post-puberty kiddos. So that's by far the most common complication.
But this kind of goes back to the importance of some of these things happening when you're a child.
Totally.
And exactly. And how we've sort of, again, shifted that burden of disease now to an older portion of the population that has more risk,
right?
Which is a concern. I mean, we have to think, I think when we make policy decisions, we have to be thinking about the long term. We can't just think about right now. Right now, if we vaccinate this generation of people, there's going to be this many won't have mumps. Cool. Okay. Right. How does this play out 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years down the line? How is it affecting us? Because if you do catch it when you're 25 and somehow that's more risky than if you caught it when you were four, then who are we saving?
Right.
It doesn't really make any sense.
Right. And when you look at the decision to vaccinate against mumps, it's interesting. You know, way back when everyone or a lot of people used to catch mumps, we had about 50 fatalities every year, way, way back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, pre-vaccine.
Which is extremely low 50. For a high population of people.
And that's about what we used to have as far as people dying from chickenpox. We had about 50 fatalities every year. Compare that to measles, we had about 400 fatalities every year. now, some years we have zero fatalities. Some years we have one. In the last 20 years, the most fatalities we had in any one year was two fatalities in 1 year. So fatalities are virtually unheard of, very, very rare. And again, it's rarely going to be a child. If there's going to be fatality, it's typically going to be an adult suffering a complication like meningitis or like a brain infection or spinal cord. Spinal meningitis or encephalitis, which is an even more severe viral infection of the brain. Very, very, very rare complication. When people get mumps meningitis, it's usually not nearly as serious as bacterial meningitis.
Right.
Mumps meningitis, you'll feel terrible. You have like the worst headache of your life, but you'll get through with you know, rarely any sort of complications. Another complication of mumps is pancreas inflammation, pancreatitis. And it's so fascinating. I mean, I find it fascinating that certain viruses have this real like proclivity to like infect certain organs. And for some reason, mumps likes the reproductive organs and it likes the pancreas. And so you can get a little bit of temporary pancreatic inflammation. And the reason why that's kind of interesting, we'll kind of come back later to vaccine side effects and how that kind of relates. But don't worry about fatality from mumps. I mean, people have a little bit of worry of fatality from things like meningitis, things like measles. But mumps, I mean, the chance that any of these college kiddos that catch it, the chance of having a complication like sterility is virtually zero. The chance of fatality is virtually zero. So you don't have to live in this fear of this disease like you might worry about some other diseases. But what do you hear? I mean, what have you heard just through the grapevine and from people, like the biggest fear about catching mumps? I mean, everyone says sterility. You're going to become sterile. That's like the biggest fear everyone has. And anytime someone in the media talks about mumps, they'll say, you know, go talk to your doctor. Make sure you don't, you know, make sure you're immune or you get a booster because you don't want to become sterile. And I didn't know this, but just reading this morning, the CDC actually admits on their website, if you read their mumps section, I wrote it down, they say, if you have inflammation of your testicles or ovaries from mumps, we have not proven that that can lead to fertility. The research, when they've looked at it, they've tried to, lead to infertility. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. They've tried to like prove it through, you know, through very thorough research to prove that infertility, like if you have inflamed testicles and ovaries, that you'll become infertile. No studies have been able to show that or conclude
that. Well, the challenge too is probably because you have to wait so long to be able to find this out, right? Yeah. I mean, you've got, if you have an infection as a teen and you have those symptoms, you're not going to find out for another 10, 15 years when you're trying to have children whether or not you're infertile. So like following up on these kinds of things probably has to be a little bit challenging.
Yeah, but they've tried.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they've tried.
They had enough years at this point.
Yeah, they've not been able to show it. Deafness is a very rare complication from having ear infections associated with mumps.
And that's the same with measles, right?
Yeah. Very rare complication. And Isla, you just posted this on your Facebook a couple of weeks ago. We have this infographic on Immunity Education Group website where we talk about how many people used to be harmed by a disease before its vaccine. And our data, our statistic is basically, you know, back in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s, before the vaccine came out in 1967, in our American population, only one out of every 2 million people in America were either dying of mumps or becoming sterile from mumps or suffering like a very severe lifelong, you know, debilitating complication for mumps, one in every 2 million people. And again, I think that it speaks to the mentality of, you know, if we can make a vaccine and do away with the disease, then that's the right choice. We should do that for every disease we possibly can.
You're saying that's how they think.
That's how they think. Mentality. Instead of what diseases should we eliminate? Right. What diseases are so fatal and dangerous? Right. And, you know, that are worthy of elimination. And that's not really how they think of it.
I kind of feel like, and not to bring up coronavirus again, because then I don't love that. But I kind of feel like, though, the discussion you're talking about, having the discussion of what should we do versus what can we do, is kind of the way that different countries have responded to COVID-19, where you've got some people understanding, hey, a virus runs its course.
Yeah.
And it is going to be harmless for most. We can shut it down. We can do a lockdown, which will have all these other unintended consequences. We can do that. We can try to stifle the virus, and we can attempt to extinguish it, as Dr. Scott Jensen said, we're trying to extinguish it versus understanding that not everything needs to be stopped. Like, I see people online going, you'll say, oh, you know, it only, the fatality rate is very low, and they'll be like, even one death is too many.
Right.
And I'm thinking, when did we get in the business of stopping every single death on this planet?
Right.
Because that's not in our control.
Right.
We cannot control the outcome of stopping every single death.
Right.
So it's just funny when I hear people saying, here's what we can do. Do we need to stop an entire generation from getting mumps? Like, did that make sense? Was that necessary, or was it just possible? You know, and you have to have those grander, broader discussions about, well, what's the downside of this down the line? How does this affect us down the line? Or do we need to intercede maybe? Maybe we don't intercede on this one. Maybe we intercede on one that's a little bit more dangerous or deadly or whatever. So it's kind of like this greater conversation I'm seeing modern medicine have. Do we go with a natural route and only intervene when we barely need to? Like when we have to?
Yeah.
Or do we intervene all the time whenever we can just because we can?
Yeah. I know. I mean, I've been... Like the earliest discussion that I was kind of privy to in the medical community was the hepatitis B vaccine in the early 90s. And I was able to watch the medical community debate this and talk about it. And, you know, should we be preventing and then other diseases that came along after that. But, yeah, I would find it fascinating how those early discussions went on. And I don't know how they made those decisions. But speaking of COVID, like you were saying, I just saw this story yesterday and it pissed me off and I couldn't wait to talk about it on the podcast. I saw a story where, you know, surprisingly, the CDC is now warning about 10 times as many people may have caught COVID than we initially realized, or 10 times more people are now infected or going to, you know, become infected with it, you know, in the months to come than people thought. You and I have been saying that from the very beginning as a reason to say, as a reason to prove why the fatality rate is like 10 times lower than they're saying, because 10 times more people are catching it. But no, now the CDC is jumping on board with that same narrative, but they're not saying, so we don't need to worry because the fatality rate therefore is 10 times lower. They're saying, no, now the virus is going to spread everywhere because we're reopening. You know, reopening is now going to put everyone at risk because 10 times as many people have caught the disease or are going to catch the disease as previously suspected because of so many unreported cases. And I just find that so frustrating that they have that that agenda to use the same data set but to put a different spin on it. And I don't know if you saw the same thing, but does that even relate to our current conversation?
I don't know if it did,
but but no, it's but
you heard COVID and then you thought, oh yeah,
oh yeah,
so it relates.
So so that's the disease. I don't think there's anything else I need to tell you about the disease, and it's pretty pretty interesting though, I thought. So the vaccine. So basically, they made a vaccine in 1967. It was a single mumps vaccine, but they used a certain strain of mumps that was too infectious. And it was actually causing tons of meningitis, tons of live mumps meningitis infections in people. Mm. It was a huge problem, especially over in the UK, where I think they used it over there before they used it here. And people were dropping left and right from this meningitis
like
in the
dying?
60s. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
From mumps vaccine strain meningitis in the 60s and 70s. And so they... And there were reports all over, and then you know people were saying there's a huge problem, and no one was listening, and then finally... They started to listen. So they had to change it. They got a new strain, like a different strain of the mumps that they're able to get it like more attenuated, more weakened. So it did not cause that reaction as often, but it still does. It still can cause a mumps meningitis reaction. So they made the single vaccine up until 2007, and then they stopped. They added it to measles and mumps, I think, in the 70s initially, and then they made a new version in the mid-80s, and that's what we use today, the triple MMR vaccine. If you look at the description section of the MMR vaccine product insert, it's very old-fashioned. Every other vaccine product insert that's out there is like a new version, but the measles, the MMR one, they wrote many, many years ago. They haven't updated it, so... What's problematic about this vaccine is this is one of the vaccines that has uses fetal tissues to nourish the germ components, and where the rubella germs initially came from, it was from fetal-infected fetuses.
But if you would have had the mumps vaccine by itself, it wouldn't, but because the only way you can get vaccinated
Correct.
Against mumps today is to have the MMR vaccine, because that vaccine
Right.
has the aborted fetal tissue cells because of the rubella component,
Right.
then everybody getting anything for measles, mumps, or rubella Yeah. now has to be exposed to it.
Right, which is a shame. So there was an advantage of having this the separate measles and the separate mumps vaccines. And what's interesting is, you know, from a religious standpoint, even though the Catholic Church officially says, you know, it's okay to get a vaccine with aborted fetal tissue, there's an asterisk with that statement. It says only if there's no alternative.
Right.
Only if there's no alternative.
And there is no alternative.
And there used to be an alternative,
right, right.
and they've taken away the alternative. So that's, again, that's very unfortunate.
It's weird, right? Because it's like every other product, we have regular competition. We have the ability to have different products that are offering
yeah.
the same thing. And this, in the world of vaccines, for the most part, you have one... Sorry, I'm getting attacked by bugs here. You have one vaccine per, so you don't have choices. You can't compare
right.
to and say, oh, this one's less reactive. This one has less side effects, or this one works better. You
right.
don't get the option as a consumer to have
right.
choices, which that seems problematic to me.
Yeah, most vaccines have two or three makers, so you have choices. The MMR vaccine, there's only one maker. It's made by Merck, and they have a monopoly on it in the United States, although not in other countries. There is another company that makes a competitive MMR vaccine available in other countries, but we can't get that one in the United States. So you get the vaccine when you're 1 year old and 5 years old. And if you, or you can get it later in school if you didn't get it when you were younger. The side effects basically mimic the disease. You know, the mumps-related side effects. You can get pancreatitis. You can get meningitis. You can get mumps and encephalitis. You can get parotid gland swelling. You know, you can get, you know, fever and achiness. And during that outbreak on the military ship, where they had mumps outbreak, so they gave everybody an MMR booster on that ship. And then they had this huge outbreak of cheek swelling among the sailors. And a lot of that was probably, you know, vaccine reaction. What I kind of find, I don't know, statistically interesting is, I would say, given how rare mumps is now, you're probably statistically more likely to suffer one of those severe complications, like in your pancreas or in your brain or in your reproductive organs from the vaccine as a vaccine inflammatory reaction, than you are taking the chance that you're going to catch the disease and suffer a natural version of the reaction. There's probably more of that happening as a vaccine side effect than naturally, statistically speaking, which is a little problematic. So a little statistics on adverse events. So the NVIC, if you search each disease on the NVIC website, you will see they have a section like quick facts about this vaccine. So they have quick facts about the mumps vaccine, but it's actually grouped with the MMR vaccine. So if you look at all the statistics on MMR vaccine reactions, so over all the years that we've had an MMR vaccine, and we've been tracking reactions through the through VAERS, there have been 95,000 total reactions reported to the database. There have been 7,000 hospitalizations reported after MMR vaccine, 1,800 permanently disabling reactions, and 432 deaths reported, like in a timely, you know, fashion right after getting an MMR vaccine. And some of these might be a plain mumps vaccine if any of these were reported just from mumps, but most of this is from the MMR vaccine. So you're seeing, you know, the number of reported complications from this vaccine and deaths. I mean, in the last, we've been doing VAERS data for what, 30 years? I think 30 years now we have VAERS data. We've had 432 deaths reported from this vaccine. And we've only had maybe 20, 30, 40 deaths in all that time, maybe from mumps. We've maybe had, you know, a number of hundred deaths from measles during that time. But we've actually reached the point where we're having more death, more fatal reactions to the vaccine reported every year than we are to the diseases. Mm. And again, that's kind of statistically interesting. So there's one more topic on this that I want to talk about. It's the Merck MMR vaccine and mumps vaccine lawsuit that you alluded to earlier. And it all kind of plays into the interesting issues of when a company has a monopoly on a vaccine or the only company that makes it, they maybe can get away with a vaccine that doesn't work very well. Or they, you know, might go to some steps to try to make it look better than it really does, because if they have a monopoly on it and they're going to get the government to mandate it, they want to have the only product out there that will have to be given to, you know, every one of those 4 million children in the country. So you've heard about the lawsuit. I didn't even know about it until our friend Janet started talking about it. This is the first conversation I had with her. Have you ever talked to Janet on the phone?
Yeah.
I don't want to say her last name, but we love you, Janet, if you're a listener. But yeah, if you accept a call from Janet, you got to commit to about an hour conversation, but I always learned something very fascinating from her. So this is where I first learned about this lawsuit. What year was it? In 2010, two doctors who did vaccine research and MMR vaccine development for Merck, mm-hmm. two researchers came forward as whistleblowers. blowing the whistle on how Merck developed the mumps part of the MMR vaccine. And I was surprised I hadn't heard about this because I've been reading stuff for 10 years at least by that time. And I didn't hear about this until 2015, 5 years after this whistleblower lawsuit started. So these two doctors, Dr. Stephen Crawling and Dr. Joan Wlachowski, they came forward, and what they said is they said that Merck, their boss at Merck, instructed them to fake the mumps vaccine research, the efficacy research, the research that showed how well the vaccine worked. They were told to fake the research so they could get the vaccine approved by the FDA. And what they were told to do was they're trying to basically prove that humans would react to the vaccine by developing high blood titer levels, high immunity levels, and trying to get like levels that I think were just as high as the natural infection immunity. And so you can get comparable immunity. And if we could show our vaccine gives you just as high immunity as people who had natural infection, we will then get the vaccine approved. And lo and behold, we'll be the only ones with the vaccine, so it'll be even better. Well, what these two researchers said, and this first detail I'm a little bit hazy on, but my understanding is they couldn't get the mumps virus vaccine to give immunity as high as natural infection. So they infected some test subjects with a weakened vaccine strain and tried to compare those results to show that the new vaccine strain was just as good as the weakened infectious process in test subjects. But the new vaccine strain wouldn't even live up to that weakened version of the virus. They couldn't get the vaccine to work as well, so that didn't work. So they gave a whole bunch of test subjects the vaccine, drew their blood to check their immunity. They also gave a bunch of rabbits the mumps vaccine and drew blood from the rabbits, got the rabbit immunities out of the rabbit blood and mixed it in with the human test samples to raise the immunity levels in the human test samples. And then they tested those samples and wow, lo and behold, all of a sudden we have high immunity levels.
They were looking for 85%, right?
Isn't right.
That the number they were trying to reach?
Yeah, they're trying to get some sort of percentage level. I think you're right. I think they're looking for 85%, but they wanted 95% and they got it. This new, you know, human test samples from the vaccine mixed with rabbit blood samples from the vaccine gave high immunity levels in 95% of test subjects. And that's what they were going for. And so then they got the vaccine approved. And these whistleblowers came forward saying, this is the process. According to them, this is their opinion. And I don't know what evidence they have for this. But so they sued Merck as whistleblowers. That lawsuit started in 2010 in federal court. And this is what I learned from Janet, is every year they go back to court and every year the judge allows a continuance. The Merck lawyers say, oh, we're not ready. You need more time.
Sounds like vaccine court.
I know.
What they do to the parents of kids that have been injured and they try to delay it.
So the next year, and then the last update I got from 2019 is again another continuance.
Gosh.
The judge said, oh, yeah, it looks like maybe there's a case here, but the Merck lawyers aren't ready yet, so we're going to go through. And
how is that even constitutional? How are there not a system of checks and balances in place?
I do not know. It boggles the mind. But what's interesting is why they're actually able to sue in the federal court is because Merck has a monopoly on the vaccine. Now, it's not just a fake research lawsuit. It's an antitrust lawsuit. Merck is now, it's like, it's okay to defraud the government. And if you get away with it, then it's okay. But if you defraud the government with a monopoly on something, that's way, way wrong. Like the government really frowns on that. And that like takes it to a new level. And that's what they're looking at, is looking at the lawsuit kind of a, combined fraudulent research, but now you've also defrauded the government as a company while you have a monopoly on something. So it's very fascinating.
But nobody is being held accountable.
Not yet. But I don't know how they make this go away completely. I mean, I feel like eventually they have to be in front of a judge to get this to move through. But my experience, you know, in my office, like, yeah, I used to give a lot of people the separate measles and the separate mumps and the separate rubella vaccines. Now that I'm checking their titers years later, almost all of those mumps kids are immune still. Kids that I'm giving the MMR to, I am finding mumps immunity in less than half of those kids. I'm finding measles immunity in almost all of them, rubella immunity in almost all of them, but mumps, no.
And these are still under 18.
Yeah, these are all like 5-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 12-year-olds. People are getting the vaccine now because they don't want to homeschool. They don't want to move. So they're going ahead with a vaccination. And we're hoping to only do one. So we do the vaccine and then we do immunity.
Yeah.
And the mumps part is failing. And I have to call the parents and say, I'm sorry, you need a full MMR vaccine all over again, only because the mumps component, which is crappy to begin with, because if this is true, they faked the research. So no wonder it's not giving immunity. And then you get the second dose, and you know, you don't have to check immunity after the second dose because they just assume
it's all good.
I bet those mumps components is not working.
Well, also, you see a lot of people who, let's just say, don't develop immunity to the measles portion of the MMR. That it doesn't matter how many times you get it. There are people that will never develop immunity. And, you know, Dr. Scott Jensen was talking about this, that there are people that there is some type of genetic component that keeps you from being able to actually be infected with certain diseases. So that it wouldn't matter if you want it, even if you wanted to, you wouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to think that not everybody is able to be infected with the disease. That's the same, makes the same sense of why not everybody would be able to create, you know, the antibody response to a vaccine also, no matter how many times you're increasing that dose.
Oh, you know how many, this drives me crazy. A lot of nursing programs now have mandatory hepatitis B vaccine immunity checks. And like if you have the 3 shots as a child, they check your immunity. If you don't have immunity, they give you another shot, check immunity, another shot, check immunity. I've had adult women tell me that they've had like 6 or 7 hepatitis B doses and they keep making them get more doses because they're not registering immunity. At some point, you think you just leave it up to the nurse, leave it up to the individual.
And hepatitis B has a high aluminum rate too
particular
vaccine,
right? Yeah, you just pump yourself full of aluminum each time. Yeah. So that was mumps. I don't know. I've probably seen 10 cases of mumps in my office over all these years.
Not too many.
I've probably confirmed 2 or 3 of them as far as testing goes. Often we won't even confirm testing. You know, they just stay at home to ride it out. But yeah, it's kind of a fun disease to see. Like when someone calls us and they say, oh, I think I have measles, I'm like, oh, crap, you know. Don't come into our office. I'll see you when you're outside. And I mean, mumps, we don't bring them into the office anyway. But when it's a mumps case, I'm more kind of like interested, you know, because I know the kid's going to be okay. They're not going to be harmed.
Like, let me see those swollen cheeks.
I know. So I get to see and, you know, use my medical expertise. And then when they find out the treatment is just lemons and oranges, they're like, really? like, yeah, trust me, lemons and oranges. You'll get through it. Just salivate, drain your glands, and you'll be fine.
Oh, that's good.
Anyway, kind of interesting disease. So that's
so.
Mumps.
Have you been?
Was that fascinating? Was that fun, Melissa?
Would you like
me
to say yes? So, have you been getting a lot of people in your office asking about COVID for kids? Like, oh, I think my kid might be. These are the symptoms.
No, like 2 or 3 maybe. Yeah, yeah. I'm not seeing it. But did you want to talk about more about COVID? You can.
No, I just was thinking about. If parents now are going to their pediatricians, you know, the way that they would have about mumps and measles back in the day when those were normal, and now COVID's something people are experiencing, so are they coming to their doctor saying, hey, my kid has these symptoms. Is it COVID?
I just think they're not catching it yet around here, the kids. I think it's still, it's either so like barely symptomatic or very mildly symptomatic, or people just aren't catching yet. But we've had a few calls. And
my question is, where are all the other illnesses?
They're nowhere. They're seeing anybody.
Right. Where's strep? Where are all the normal things that kids get? It's like everything has magically disappeared.
Yeah. And you know what someone needs to do? Someone needs to do some like research related to how kids' health goes like for this year and next year, given that Americans have now very largely gone unvaccinated, you know, for the last 4 to 6 months. And I'd like to see how these babies are doing and what their health is like.
Or are they going to all get caught up? you know, within the next couple of months, and then we won't be able to tell, because then when you do that study, it won't matter at that point unless they stayed without. But, you know, I mean, there are a couple different ways to argue why there are less diseases in general. Like, obviously, a lot less people are commingling together. Mm-hmm. So kids spread, you know, to other kids. But if they're not in school, they're not playing together, all those things, then you're not going to see cases of stuff. But I can't imagine, with all the people going to grocery stores, and a lot of people are still out. I mean, a good portion of people are out. How is it that there's no, like, bronchitis, and there's no, like, regular pneumonia and that kind of stuff, the flu? Like, how come it's only either COVID or you're asymptomatic with nothing?
Yeah. Well, maybe it's just because it's off season. I mean, once flu season's over in March, there really isn't anything, I guess. Just
don't you have patients coming in sick between March and October ever?
Well, in summer we have tons of, like, fevers, vomiting, diarrheal illnesses. Where are we? The end of June. So maybe those aren't going to spread around as much, because not as many kids are in childcare.
Like, you know, the intestinal
preschool
stuff, right?
Yeah, intestinal
stuff. Like polio was during the summer.
Yeah, but we don't get a lot of respiratory disease during the spring and summer anyway.
But it's almost that dropped off as soon as coronavirus came on the market. Like, as soon as that thing was here, I stopped hearing about any of the other stuff people get. Yeah. It was either COVID or nothing else. And I'm thinking, gosh, we had a whole list of things people used to get.
When school gets back in session, I'm not looking forward to what we're going to see.
Well,
with
I don't know
COVID
if
and other illnesses.
I don't know if it's going to get back in session. I feel like they're going to backtrack on this.
Yeah. So the private schools in our area are so far planning to move forward.
Yeah, but wait till the fall.
So our colleges and
if fall comes back and all of a sudden the flu. Oh, did you hear Fauci say there's a new flu that's going to be pandemic now? A new swine flu.
Oh, jeez.
Coming from China. That's found in pigs that he thinks could be a pandemic. Now, they have not proven that it actually transfers from a pig to a human, but that's not important. Let's put the article out anyway. You've got these news, major news going, we've got another flu coming. Yeah. I'm like, whoa, isn't that timing just coincidental? Yeah. So, I mean, you can imagine in the fall, I don't know how things are going to stay open if all this stuff hits at once. And again, have we made ourselves more susceptible by being isolated this whole time?
I know, but I think people have sort of partly woken up to the idea that the economy needs to.
You can wait.
Yeah. We're pausing for airplane noise that maybe only we can hear.
That's like the kind that you hear, like, at the beach with, like, the little, like, flag.
Yeah.
Brings back memories.
Oh, I see. It says, hey, Melissa and Dr. Bob.
keep up the
good
work.
We love you, Melissa and Dr. Bob. So funny. But I think people are waking up to the fact that the economy does need to move forward. And I guess what I'm hoping is that even the Democratic governors and the Democratic states might realize there needs to be a better balance. Instead of total shutdown, there needs to be,
I don't know,
these need to stay partially open, because the virus is going to kind of circulate.
It has to circulate.
Yeah, anyway.
But it has to in order for us to get through it.
And are enough people going to see that?
But did you see Newsom? He's already closing down other bars and counties already again.
Yeah.
So,
but that's like the highest level of, or the lowest level of closing down.
But that's where it starts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that how it started last time?
Yeah.
He's already put 7 counties on warning, 12 counties on warning.
Yeah.
No, 13 now.
Like our county.
Ours is
our
too.
County's been bad.
Yeah. Well, we're number 13 now. So we're on warning.
Yeah.
And so that's where it starts, right? But again, I feel like we have to experience it. We have to be allowed to experience it so that we can all get this out and about. I shared the graph today about Sweden. You look at the differences, and, like, our deaths are, like, still happening every single day. They're not dropping, and they're not going to drop, I don't think, for months because of the way we handled it, versus let the peak happen and drop it down and be over it and don't have the second and third waves. Or if you do, it's going to be almost minuscule. Now we're going to have just one big extended wave that's just going to last for like a year and a half. How is that going to help anybody?
Dude.
I mean.
But aren't they, it's stupid, but I feel like people weigh up, and people who, you know, stand to make lots of money on this are probably hoping it lasts a long time so that, you know, the vaccine will make
it
here in
time. Of course they're hoping for that.
And they're not going to say that publicly, but, you know, people are, like, salivating at that.
See, you
idea.
Like talking about COVID. See, you've missed it. I knew it.
Wait, let's wrap this up here, and we'll have a part two.
Just kidding, everyone.
Compare and contrast mumps and COVID.
Well,
what you need to know.
Whether we like it or not, it's part of the discussion.
Should you ask your doctor about? No. Anyway, so I guess we can wrap this up. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, that's been mumps and COVID in Melissa's backyard and a nice cool
getting some
breeze.
Vitamin D.
Yeah, we are.
To my feet and my
now
arms.
The sun,
it's now nice.
The sun's
how
out
nice
here.
Is it we to have like beautiful breeze?
Here we are continuing to talk. I bet the music started already though, so it's probably fading us out. But
well,
anyway,
thanks
well,
for
you
listening.
Guys don't forget Melissa's podcast, What They Aren't Telling You. My podcast, A Tale of Two Sides.
Tale of Two Sides.
Enjoy those, and we will see you next time. I don't know when that'll be, but it'll be soon on the...
You don't even know the name of the podcast. That is so
sad. I know. Yeah. Well, this has been a tale of two sides that they aren't telling you.
What they aren't telling you about the tale of two sides.
Alrighty. So this is the vaccine one, right?
This is the official end.
Where we talk about
we're
vaccines.
We're really going to end this conversation.
Okay,
right. Yeah.
Okay.
Right now.
We'll see you next time on...
Yeah, that thing.
The vaccine.
And
conversation.
Lots of Facebook Lives because Dr. Bob loves
us.
So even if we're doing fewer episodes on this over the summer, we will be still checking in with you.
Yeah.
And we're literally waiting for that podcast.
It's already over, so they can't hear what you're saying.
Oh.
Can they? I'll make sure they do it. Right?
It's not over until I say it's over.
What am I doing? I have the soundboard. I could have stopped this like minutes
cut?
Ago.
How dare you do a cut? I need to get the hook. Just carry on.
The information in this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as medical advice. Always consult your healthcare professional for information on vaccines and infectious diseases.